Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Press Pause Let's Chat, where I have the absolute pleasure of interviewing creatives in the TTRPG space to talk about what they do and why they do it. So as you now may know, we are very close to releasing a new mini show using the Bard RPG system. And today I get to chat with the creator of said system, Scriv. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited. Y'all are the first ones to do an actual play with Bard RPG, other than like the playtesting kinds of things I myself had done in the past. And I cannot wait to see this game out in the wild. I can't wait to see how you all use it. I'm just very excited, very happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, of course. I think the last time we spoke about this actually was about a year ago, when I first contacted you about doing it. It always takes longer than you expect to get something up and rolling.
Ain't that the truth? Yeah. Life is nuts sometimes.
It truly is. But I guess before we jump into talking about the game, I kind of want to get a little introduction to you. So the first big question here would be, how did you happen upon TTRPGs?
Ooh, the origin story.
Yes.
So it was, oh my God, how long ago was it now? When I was at the young age of 22. no offense to 22-year-olds out there.
But
it seems
they're
like
young.
So long ago now. around that age, 21, 22, I played my first D&D game. I had played different types of like CRPGs, role-playing game, video game types of things. I am a gamer in the various forms, but I never had the chance, as many of you in the audience could probably relate to, I never really had the chance to play D&D or to play other types of TTRPGs when I was like a teenager, when I was a student, because I just didn't know the right people. And I didn't have the right kind of friend group. So I played my first game. I was hooked. My first couple of experiences were just as a player. I remember my first character, just your usual, like, half-elf ranger, preferred the company of animals than over other humanoids.
Too.
Was it?
Yeah.
It's such a trope. But I much preferred to roll for animal friendship and make friends with, I don't know, the ducks in the pond and the moose in the forest. Over time, I learned about what kind of stories I liked. I've always loved writing. I've always loved storytelling. I've done that since I was very, very small, a wee bardling. And I fell in love with GMing. And a group of friends and I, from that point forward, had a homebrew system, Iastera, which we had continued to explore and develop for years. I eventually had to move house. My day job kept me fairly busy moving here and there. And I evolved that GMing experience and homebrewing into a series of storytelling workshops and intro sessions for children and their families at a local game store. Bookstore with a very good games department. Shout out to Heifer's Games, if any of you guys know that one. But we just, that was like the birth of Scriv at that point. Things just progressed and steamrolled from there.
I was going to say, I feel like a lot of people's intro to the game is through D&D. Mm-hmm. But I found, because mine was as well, but I found that I'm definitely drawn to like a little bit games with a little bit less structure that are more narrative focused. And that's kind of what drew me to Bard. And it feels like maybe that's kind of the same boat for you.
Absolutely. And when I say we played D&D for years, it was a very homebrewed version of D&D. And when I started designing games for kids and using TTRPGs, at that time D&D, because it was the most readily available, to teach children about storytelling, it got me thinking more and more about how this game is great. No shade here and now. But it's not really what I was looking for. And as an all-ages game designer and storyteller, I started to see which elements of the game that kids were
engaging with more over others. And we had an ongoing campaign with a couple of different family groups, mixed ages, kids, older siblings, younger siblings, parents would all come together and play this game. And it's true. We needed something that was more narrative focused, that offered more flexibility and more creativity, that didn't quite have the same preconceived notions and the weight of the structure, the weight of the very entrenched themes that D&D brought with it. It brings a lot of baggage to the table in some ways, good and bad. So that really, before I realized I was starting to design what would eventually become Bard RPG, that was the beginning of that journey. Coming up with different rules, different ways of playing, different ways to emphasize the shared storytelling. And that was back in 2017, 2018. And now all of that led up to Bard RPG, which is about to go live.
During that time in that process, did you find other TTRPGs that kind of helped influence your own design?
There were a few that I really enjoyed. I pulled from other TTRPGs as well as other just forms of media in general.
Okay.
Looking at things like Lady Blackbird, if any of you know that one, Dread. Dread is one of my favorite games, and anytime I've been asked about different game inspirations, I will nerd out about Dread all day.
I actually don't have much experience with that one. Do you mind giving a little?
Yes. You're great. Letting me info dump on a yes. fixation. Yes. So Dread, if anyone out there is not familiar with Dread, it is, let me try to find, I'll have to send you the actual link later on. But you can find it online. You can download the quick guide and some of the sample stories for free. It's a horror RPG, a horror TTRPG. The only tool, the only decision-making thing is a Jenga tower. So instead of having things like dice and skill checks and different ability scores and stats, you have your character. It's very, very narrative driven. It adopts that style of oral storytelling where you're sitting around a campfire. Imagine that. You're sitting around a campfire telling scary stories, telling ghost stories, monster stories, and you have this Jenga tower. You fill out a prompt for your character about your hopes and dreams, your fears, your secret drama, if there is some, with another character, a secret that you're keeping hidden from everyone else. And every time you want to make a decision or do something that influences the story, that's an important one. If you're influencing the story or changing the course of an action or an event in some way, you pull a block from the Jenga tower. That determines whether you are successful or not. So one of the most critical elements of telling a scary story, telling a ghost story or a horror story, is that element of suspense. And the use of that Jenga tower just naturally builds that suspense. The farther into the story you go, if you're the one who knocks over the tower, you're character is removed in some way from the story, and then it gets rebuilt with a few fewer blocks, with a few blocks missing to already give it some of that instability, and the rest of the players have to continue on and try to survive or get to the escape, whatever the goal may be. Epidiah Ravichol, shout out. Thank you, Epidiah, for a beautiful game, but it's very narrative focused.
Yeah, I haven't had much experience playing games that aren't dice focused. So Jenga Tower or card systems. Yes. Yeah. So
I love having, I'm very tactile. I like having something, but I like it when the tools that you use for a game help to support the design goals of that game. And a game to me like Dread was just so perfectly designed for what it is, for what the genre is. And most of us know how to play Jenga.
Yeah.
It's very easy to pick up. But I think one of the pieces that I drew from it the most when it came to using that and games like that for Bard RPG inspiration was that it's character-driven storytelling. We see different types of storytelling out there. You have character-driven, you have plot-driven in two simplistic forms. I love stories that are character-driven, where the progression of events is driven by the choices that you make, versus you are a passive observer in the world around you and you just react to events. And I found that in some other conventional TTRPGs, like D&D, like Pathfinder, think of your classics, you're just responding to things. And that's kind of how the game is designed in a lot of ways. But when you have games that put the narrative decisions and the weight of those decisions in your hands, and when the tools you're using, the decision-making, whatever it is that you're using, when you use those and you implement them in order to change something instead of in order to react to something, I think it's very interesting, and it gives kind of a subtle but significant shift to how you approach a game.
Were TTRPGs kind of what opened this world of game design for you, or were you already kind of on that as a writer on that path?
I think it opened it up a lot more. I was already familiar with storytelling and different approaches to storytelling. And I'd worked with kids before, so I knew how to gamify things. But it wasn't until I really got into TTRPGs that I actually started thinking about game mechanics in that way. The closest I'd ever gotten to game mechanics before was through video games, through console and PC gaming. But I didn't learn to appreciate them, really, until I started engaging with that side of being a gamer through TTRPGs.
I think that game design is so interesting, especially when it comes to tabletop games, because you mm-hmm. aren't just like creating like a visual for somebody to play through. You're giving them the tools to, as we were saying, like have a character driven, like make their own story in a sense. And I mm-hmm. think, and I think that Bard RPG has a really good structure in doing that, because you have like the plot points mechanic that adds to creating the plot twist mechanic that gives it, like leaves it up to the players to change the course mm-hmm. of the story.
That's the goal. And it makes me so happy to hear you say that, because we're still young, Bard RPG. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you so much for saying that.
Oh, yeah.
That's absolutely something that we wanted to capture. And it's true. Once you start thinking about game mechanics, it changes a lot of how we consume media and how we approach something as players, as GMs. Because when you're a writer, you're telling a story that you want to tell, you're engaging with an audience, but you're kind of working with a captive audience. Just like when you're making a movie or anything like that. But when you open up that door of interaction, you have to think about the players. You have to think about your audience, whether it's a TTRPG or a video game. You need to think about how will they respond to it. They have a say. And any GM out there is going to empathize with the experience of having pages and pages of things written up, players having a say, and then, well, those pages go out the window. Time to do something on the fly.
Yeah.
And I wanted to have a system that would be able to flex with that would be able to flow with changes, so you don't have something that's so restricting, that's so confining.
Another part of Bard RPG is that you don't necessarily have to have a narrator or a GM. You can play this right. just with a group of people. For the podcast, we do have a GM. It kind of helps to facilitate mm-hmm. Structure for that. But it's kind of the same thing with one of my favorite games, Wander Home, which also is a GM-less system. And that's just, I feel like, so unique when you approach people who maybe came from playing D&D or Pathfinder or those kind of systems that are built on the basis that one person is the god of the game. Right. And so like opening it up and allowing for the entire group as a whole to like truly communally tell a story.
Absolutely. I think, you have a lot more investment around the table whether physical or virtual, when you all have a say in how the story progresses. And that's especially true when you're looking at all ages. It's especially important, I think, when you're looking at all ages game design, because you're going to have people who might be a little bit intimidated to try to influence something or to jump in. But when you open it up and you're telling a story together, and it was important to me to have, and the team, to have a GM-less shared narration playstyle for Bard RPG. And again, that was a lesson learned from working with kids, because they would all get excited about coming up with a new idea or saying, oh, what if the Red Caps are not evil? What if they're forest rangers and they're trying to protect things? Or what if we don't have to just go in with flaming, you know, dagger tornado and you know, bust everything up? What if there are other ways to do it?
New favorite spell, flaming dagger tornado.
Okay, these kids, though, the biggest murder hobos, chaos gremlins, worse than any grown player I'd ever dealt with. What was it? It was flying daggers and a fireball or firestorm or something.
And they just
combined it, and I'll be darned if it didn't work.
Yeah.
Almost every time. But I think that having shared narration, like I said, it changes your level of investment with the game, and it opens the door for what's the word I'm looking for? More of that cooperation. It also solves a problem that is very common in the TTRPG world, where there are never enough GMs.
Yeah.
I would recommend playing with the narrator-led option first, if it's your first time playing with Bard RPG, because it will be a little bit easier. But doing the shared narration is a lot of fun, especially for a one-shot.
Yeah, I also
think there are a lot of ways you could use that.
Having somebody who, even if it's, you're not using the one narrator thing trope or a game mechanic, having someone who like actually really does know the game. I think this goes for any game though, just to facilitate further understanding while you play.
Absolutely.
So we talked a little bit about the origins of this, which was a long time homebrew over many years. What was the point when you went, oh, okay, I'm making a new game?
When I realized I was getting tired of skill checks.
Okay. Yeah.
And having long lists of things to memorize. Especially, again, and I'm going to reference this a lot, when I was working with kids and families with the original Heroes of Ayestera, which one day Ayestera will be a campaign setting book.
I was going to ask. I was like, are we going to see?
One day. I'm not putting a date on that.
Yeah, don't do that to yourself.
But at some point in the future, Bard RPG is going to have some different associated campaign settings.
Wonderful.
Because it is a genre agnostic system. That'll be another thing, but this might be the first time I've said it publicly. So keep an eye out. Awesome. Looking at fantasy, looking at a sci-fi one as well.
Very cool.
But yes.
I was saying, when you realized it was a game of its own. Yes.
Yes. Having all of these different things you had to memorize and constantly reference back to. You can't play some games without having a book there, right? And your lists of things. And there's a time and a place for it. I still enjoy that. But I wanted something way more streamlined. So as soon as I got to the point where I realized I wanted an action wheel, I wanted action domains, it changed. I said, okay, this isn't just homebrew anymore. A lot of other things I'd already started kind of shifting and evolving. Things like plot points or something that became plot points and the way threads are used. But... yeah, I think it was actions, because it was definitely a different game at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think D&D is definitely the most mechanic heavy with the most skill thing related things that I've ever played. And it's also really not playable if you choose not to do those things.
Right.
Like, you do have to make your own thing at that point.
You can't say, oh, this is a hack. of yeah. X game at that stage. No, it's not the game anymore.
Yeah. How long was this process then from being like, oh, okay, this is a new game I'm beginning to, I guess, kind of this Ooh. Point in time right now?
Yeah. I would say it was 2018 or early 2019 or so, if I were to think about it, when I started consciously saying, this is a new game that I'm designing, versus starting that homebrew process that evolved. Oh, taking hit points away was another one. Okay. When I realized it's a different game. I'm not doing hit points anymore. Yeah. Combat, initiative, bleh. Done.
Throw them out. We don't need them.
Yeah. You can still do combat in Bard RPG. You can. Yes. But it's not, yeah, that's not the focus. But I would say, yeah, so. Wow. Like 5-ish, 6 years, math?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh. That's the first time I've actually gone back and counted the years for how long it took to get to this point. Before I decided, of course, to do a crowdfunder or anything like that. Yeah, it's been a long time. Maybe if I had set out to say this is a game that I want to actually create and publish, maybe it would have taken less time. But yeah. In terms of the creation of the system and in its lifetime from its nascency to now, yeah, about that 5-6 years.
And I don't know if that's necessarily true. I think developing a game is a long process, you know, especially when you're creating like a book, whether it's digital or physical, and you have artists involved and other writers.
Yes.
That's not like a very quick turnaround process.
No, it's not. Well, depending on the kind of game you're developing and depending on what you count as active game development. So the process of writing it and developing the system and testing certain things for me did take that long.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this is not my full-time job. I want it to be my full-time job. That's my goal. That's what I'm working towards. But I still had my day job. I still have life things going on, especially now, having a bardling of my own at home for the first time. Life said, okay, you like designing games for kids. Here's one. Good luck. They communicate through screaming.
Just, you know, now you have your own little bardling to playtest your games for you.
And it's exciting. I'm yeah. already starting to try to find ways to game things, you know, introduce game concepts to them. We'll see how that goes. More to follow. Yeah.
I guess when you were doing this and you were designing this, at what point did you decide to like bring on other, like when did you decide you're like, oh, I'm going to have people come in and like write some playable options for the game?
As soon as I decided to actually crowdfund.
Oh, nice, nice.
As soon as I decided, you know, I want this to be for more than just a home game. I want to share this. I want to have something tangible that I and a team of people I have the utmost respect for and admiration for, something that we can put our names to and just send out in the world. So as soon as I realized, you know what, I actually want to make this a thing with artwork and all of that, I started gathering the team. Creators Assemble, which is a wonderful organization. Go look them up too. Unintentional plug. So I had a very handpicked team of artists, editors. I was working with playtesting as well. People just reviewing it in general. We even had a custom theme song done with that little promo video that is not going to be found anywhere else. That's just for Bard RPG. It's an absolutely wonderful team. And I couldn't be happier or more thankful for the people who decided to join on this project.
The art, listeners, you should get this book in some fashion because the art in it is really good. And I also, I know it's beautiful. Obviously is done on purpose, but I'm not an artist as such. And so whenever I get a book and I'm like, wow, this just like perfectly fits the vibes and the aura that the game gives off. I love that so much.
We spent so much time on artwork. Really, really did. Obviously, having other story map writers on board and the editors, you can't skimp on in terms of time spent on any part of producing a game. But the artwork is what really sells it and really helps you to immerse when you're holding it in your hand. And because it is a genre agnostic system, which means no part of the mechanics are going to be coded for fantasy or sci-fi or Western, we wanted to have the artwork reflect that. So had a team of five different artists altogether, but in terms of the people who were doing the interior art, the illustrations, really just three, each one of them picking a different genre, fantasy, sci-fi, and Western. And we decided on the consistent character types, character models. So you have the same three character models, but in these different worlds, in these slightly different but still complementary art styles that you can have them exploring, you know, a Wild West showdown, or repairing a spaceship, or being knighted on top of a castle, whatever it may be, because it was really important for us to have all of those different things represented.
I also think it helps almost make the book like its own flowing story when you see the same three, you know, characters' personas throughout.
Yeah, that was something that actually was a stroke of brilliance from the artists themselves. So Kit, Kaz, Jack, Jen, Josh, I love you all. Go check them out. You'll see them credited in the book.
There is silence in a desert where nothing moves and nothing goes.
Well, we seem to find ourselves in yet another fine and opportune place, dead as it may be.
A single tumbleweed rolls past.
Well, that kills you. It'll be exactly what you deserve.
A single tumbleweed rolls past.
I've kind of given up on trusting my gut, but this feels different.
A single tumbleweed rolls past.
Don't mean to be presumptuous, but I think this is going to go great.
There is hope out there.
I don't know, I feel like I'm just hoping about everything these days, but
hope is a commodity that's not easy to come by.
To be touched by the spirits like that, it's not always a gift.
When I say unholy, I mean the most unnatural sort of being that you've encountered.
The opportunity awaits, as long as it's not the way we came from.
As long as it's not the way we came from.
I don't know who you think you're looking at, but I promise you it's not whatever the hell you think it is.
I want to know how to make it all stop.
Time's running out, old friend. Best be getting the move on.
And a lone tumbleweed blows across your path. Shades of the West premieres August 6th on Queer PG. Hey, is anyone else out there obsessed with dice? Does anyone out there want to join the I Have Too Many Dice Sets for My Own Good Club? Or is this going to be a party of one? Because I would be the first to tell you that I have a dice problem. But I don't necessarily think that's the worst problem to have. So if you've got the same mindset, Queer PG has a fun little offer for you. If you head over to fanrolldice.com, you can use our code QueerPG10 at checkout to get 10% off your purchase. They've got gemstone dice, my personal favorite, They've got wooden dice, they've got metal dice, and a whole bunch of other designs and accessories to fit all of your Dice Gremlin needs. So, if you find you're itching for something new to add to your collection, head on over to fanrolldice.com and remember, QueerPG10, that's QUEERPG10 at checkout to get 10% off. Have fun rolling!
The mists roll across the valley over the bodies of hundreds of dead as a large figure rises above the mountains, too large to be anything mortal.
Enter Pocket Bard, immersive audio made easy. With an ever-expanding music library, Pocket Bard has made soundscaping for your TTRPG needs seamless and so very simple. The easy-to-use app provides you with scenes that include ambiance, weather patterns, quick and easy sound effects, as well as backing music with just a touch of a button. Transitioning from town to a long travel journey? Don't worry. A large selection of the music and soundscapes adjust to your adventures, transitioning seamlessly into the next scene. You'll unlock a wide variety of music for all genres of play so that you can weave an incredible tapestry that'll make playing at your table even more memorable than it already was. Check out Pocket Bard at www.pocketbard.app or head to your nearest app store on iOS or Android to access the magic right now.
Have you been wanting to bring your home games to the next level? Maybe you're looking for the perfect holiday gift for the TTRPG-loving person in your life. Well, during the Hero Forge Black Friday sale, you can get savings as big as the stories you tell. Maybe you're a DM and you want to gift something physical to your players of their player characters in your campaign. Or maybe you're a player and you want to give the gift of an NPC in the form of a miniature. You can save 20% on physical miniatures and accessories, such as their iconic color plastic miniatures, their new, super cute custom acrylic keychains, or their 3D printed custom dice, as well as 50% on digital miniatures and STL files. The sale ends December 1st, so don't delay! Restrictions apply. Head to heroforge.com/sale for more details.
My dearest listener, have I got a secret for you? Bitterton is an improvised comedy podcast inspired by the stories of Jane Austen that tells the tale of a wealthy family's secrets, scandals, and shenanigans. Lady Bitterton has unwed daughters, nosy neighbors, awful country cousins, and now a body to hide. Will the Bitchertons be able to keep their secrets off the pages of Lady Bigwither's gossip sheet? Or will her pen skewer their good name forever? Oh, Bits, what a predicament. Featuring the voices of Katie Maravich, Iffy Waddyway, Carolyn Page, Alex Songsharp, Brian Flaherty, and Cassie Wilson, plus a dance card filled with guest comedians of the very finest quality. But for us to help the seeds of rumor ripen into the juicy plum of scandal, we'll need your help. Bitcherton is heading to Kickstarter on June 13th. Go to bitcherton.com to pre-save the campaign and help us bring this story to life. Ta-ta for now.
Speaking of it being genre agnostic, one of my big questions was in the stats that you do get in your game, one of them is supernatural. And my biggest question was, why did you land on that word instead of like magic or the weird or something like that?
That was a lot of debate within the team. A lot of workshopping to figure out what made the most sense. Initially, it was magic, but you don't have magic necessarily in that same way in sci-fi. And the weird, to me at least, had too much of an association with Weird West, which I love as a genre. I absolutely love. And that's one of the genres used in one of the story maps, Dust to Dust. It's more of a Weird West spooky kind of thing. But we thought that supernatural was the most flexible of the terms, literally just meaning beyond normal, beyond the natural means. So that could be anything from actual magic, that could be telekinesis, that could be some sort of psionic thing.
Yeah. It just was a broader term for the category. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of our editing review for with our team of three editors was to go through and say, does this word make sense? Do we have consistency in how these different themes are presented, regardless of whether or not we've got sci-fi, fantasy, or Western artwork on the page?
Mm-hmm.
That aside, because my ideal scenario is for someone to say, hey, I love this movie or this book, this type of media. I'm in love with Studio Ghibli. I want to use that in a game somehow. But a lot of the games that were out there at the time of Bard RPG creation weren't so flexible with that. So I wanted to offer up, okay, here's a system that you can apply to anything.
I enjoy that because I very much like being able to jump around, and especially, you know, running a podcast where we are trying to, you know, stretch the limits of story and tell a bunch of different kinds. It was super fun to, I think the most recent one we did actually, sorry to cut myself off there, but
go for it.
We used Thirsty Sword Lesbians, which is also a genre agnostic system.
Yes.
and it's just super fun to be able to take a game, take a list of rules, mechanics, that sort of thing, and put it to whatever you want to. So you're not hemmed in by necessarily setting or genre. Like a lot of games, which are fine. But when you need the room to for a little bit more of your own creativity in the making of something, I really like that it allows for that. My other mechanics question I had for you was creating like a dice pool mechanic rather than set die for the stats. And I assume, and please tell me if I'm wrong, that that's so that you have more character flexibility rather than every stat being a certain die?
Yes, and. So it does give you more flexibility. It gives you something tangible for character advancement as well. So for example, if you gain enough plot points, you can improve one of your action domains, your proficiency basically. By doing that, you just add another d6. So you have more to roll, more opportunity to succeed. Also, and here is just the most simple, easy answer.
Yeah, sometimes that's
It's so much fun rolling a lot of dice. It really is. No matter what age you are, I'm a goblin. I want to roll all the clicky-clacky things. And a lot of my players did too. So the idea that you can gain, and this is something that was fun about Lady Blackbird as well, when you gain more and more dice, you feel like you can really achieve something with that, mm-hmm. right? There's a thrill.
There's like a physical connection to what
you're doing. Yeah, there's a physical connection. Like I have the power in my hands, all of these dice, and it's just so satisfying as well. And also soul crushing if all of them roll low.
Yes.
So you have the ups and downs there. But I also thought that that would be a very fun thing to do when you have the collaborative plot twist where everyone donates dice to a common pool and you roll them all together. It really has that feeling of everyone coming together, uniting your powers to achieve something crazy.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite mechanics in the game that I'm really, really hoping our players in our series take advantage of. Because, yeah, I also like, as a narrator or storyteller or a game master, being thrown that curveball.
Yes.
And, like, also, like, not to be lazy, but sometimes handing the reins over and being like, you figure,
absolutely.
You do it. I've thought enough.
And you know, that's a mark of an experienced storyteller, an experienced GM. When you can let go of the wheel or throw something out there that you don't really have an explanation for yet, mm-hmm. and just let them surprise you.
Yeah.
It's one of the most liberating things.
Yeah. It really is. Because you also realize that, like, there's not actually this, like, weird power dynamic, and that the people you're playing with almost always have better ideas than you do.
Absolutely. Give your players a locked box or an undecipherable book and let them tell you what it is or what's inside it.
Yep. Oh, another thing I wanted to touch on that about how the Bard RPG is written is the, I'm not going to be able to pronounce his name, so I'm going to let you do it for me, but the four-act story structure.
Kisho Tenketsu, another thing that I'm very nerdy about.
Yes. And I do want you to explain what that is and hear more about.
Yeah, totally. So one of my degrees back in my student days was in Japanese, you know, including culture, literature, all of that. Kisho Tenketsu is the four-act story structure. It's very simple, and yet it's not as commonly used in our typical three-act structure for Western storytelling. It's sometimes considered to be a style of storytelling without conflict. That's not always true, just conflict or tension, suspense in different forms, and it's not fully focused on the conflict as like the big thing, the climax of the story. So Kisho Tenketsu is broken up into four parts. You start with the introduction. I'm actually going to open this up to make sure I have it all correct, because I don't want to, you know, screw myself up here. You have your introduction, same as any other typical storytelling structure. You're introduced to the characters, the setting, all of that. You have the development, where you learn a little bit more, maybe learn a little bit more about a challenge or about yourselves, about the world. And you have a twist. The twist is important because it introduces an unexpected element to the storytelling that doesn't immediately seem connected to what has already been represented in the introduction and development. And then you have the resolution. You'll notice that there's no conflict or big bad explicitly stated in there. The resolution is very important because it brings the twist and the information presented in the intro and the development together in a cohesive conclusion. So one of the most common examples, one of my favorite examples of this type of storytelling is Kiki's Delivery Service. Are you a Studio Ghibli Miyazaki fan?
I like Studio Ghibli and Miyazaki. I have not seen Kiki's though.
Okay, I'll try to do this without spoilers then. So Kiki's Delivery Service, a young witch, it's a coming of age story. You're going out and finding your place in the world. At some point, Kiki, how do I say this without spoiling too much?
You can spoil it for me.
Yeah,
it's okay.
Minor spoiler. Spoiler alert. She loses an aspect of her powers. And it comes out of nowhere. Later on, with the resolution stage of that storytelling, that, you know, losing the powers would be the twist. It certainly surprises Kiki, and it surprises other people as well. And then you have to go through that process of figuring out, what does that mean? How do we resolve it? In that resolution phase, you could consider her act of heroism, rescuing a friend, rescuing someone she cares about, bringing back the powers. You can conclude that it was linked to her confidence and her feeling of belonging in a lot of ways. If you don't believe in yourself, it's hard to do the things you love to do sometimes. You can feel like you've lost a little bit of your magic if you're going through a period of low confidence. So that would be one example.
I'm also a writer, but I haven't ever used this story structure, this type of story structure. And so when we were developing the series that we'll be doing, one of our biggest things was we were actively going to try to play it out in this 4X story structure. So we'll see how successful we are as our first attempt, but
it's not as intimidating. Kisho, it's a name that is not going to sound familiar, but as you read it a little bit more, as you understand the purpose of the twist and how it brings things together. And another key aspect of Kisho Tenketsu, is at the end of the story, there should be a change to status quo. You shouldn't be going back to how things were, or you know, when your characters go home, whatever home may be, if they even go home, if they don't just continue on their adventures, something should be inherently changed about them. You have an aspect of evolution, whether it's the characters or the world, or some sort of status. A lot of times in Western storytelling, the twist is rooted in some sort of conflict. You have a plot twist related to the fight with the big bad. It doesn't always have to be the case. Another example, if anyone enjoys international literature, there's a short book that I read called Before the Coffee Gets Cold.
Yeah, I'm going to put that on a list.
Before the Coffee Gets Cold, it's written by Toshikazu Kawaguchi. It is a beautiful and very, at times, emotional example of Kisho Tenketsu storytelling, where in the twist, there is another character that's introduced, but it's very fleeting, and you don't know the significance until the end. So, short review for this book. There is a cafe somewhere. There's a cafe, and something very special about this cafe that has always seemed to be there is that if you sit in a certain chair facing a certain way and you drink your cup of coffee, you can travel to a specified point in time. You can't change anything there. You can't get up from your chair. And if you don't drink your coffee, if you don't finish it before it gets cold, you're stuck there and you basically become like a ghost. The twist is when in the present time, when this book, when, you know, you are going through the story, the present time in the setting is when someone comes to visit the cafe that none of them expected. And they have no idea who this person is until the end of the book. And then they realize. But it's beautifully, beautifully written. I highly recommend it to anyone who is interested in, I don't know, Japanese literature, time travel, Kisho Tenketsu, because it's a fantastic example of it.
Me.
Yeah.
I will be reading it.
It's wonderful.
I hope that has maybe given our audience a little bit more of an impulse to go check out this new system. But I also wanted to chat with you about the publishing company.
Yeah.
Tattered Bear.
Tattered Bear.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it is. Oh, goodness. The hopes and dreams of myself and a few other creators, Rich Oxenham, Steph Campbell, Josh Arklin. We are your four Tattered Bears. And it's also going to be in the future the exclusive home of Bard RPG and all Bard RPG projects. In fact, if you are interested in the game, I think there might still be some community copies available. You can at least get the PDF from it at a discounted rate on tatteredbear.com. But we are setting ourselves up and have set ourselves up to be a publishing company for indie TTRPGs, specifically all ages friendly, all ages appropriate. So while we do not have, say, a physical warehouse or in-house print capability, we are offering our services to support all other aspects of bringing a game to life. That is consultation. Consultation is actually our biggest service right now. Consultation with project management, marketing. It's always very difficult for us to market ourselves. Editing. Crowdfunding, helping to review artwork, art direction, sensitivity reading as well, and cultural sensitivity reading are big ones that I myself offer too. And we are also trying to build up our YouTube channel and our Twitch production for this as well. So we are doing annual fundraisers to benefit different aspects of the TTRPG community. We're doing live game testing to help any of our clients who want to produce their game as well. We do intros and demos, and we can assist whether from just consultation for your project or helping you every step of the way through development, writing, crowdfunding, and eventual production as well. So we have a pretty vast network amongst the four of us and our expanded partners. We have some official partners with Tattered Bear as well, like Stories RPG. They're wonderful. So we have a big network to pull from.
I feel like you have found a niche that is underserved in the TTRPG space, which is, I mean, you are all ages, but that includes younger kids. And I don't feel like there's a lot of space in this community for them. And it's super cool. Yeah.
It's absolutely growing. So when I started out, I remember when I first started doing like streaming and writing a blog, which hasn't been updated in so long. It's just out there now. Scriptthebard.com. Check it out if you're interested. I haven't written anything new on there for a long time because I've just put everything into the production of this game now. Mm-hmm. I have to spend my spell slots carefully. But when we first started out, yeah, there wasn't a lot. And the idea of designing games specifically for kids, when the vast majority of the world already kind of thought D&D was just for kids anyway, it's not. Not as accessible as you'd think. But yeah, there really wasn't much out there. But with the growth of the indie game dev, the indie production space, we're seeing a lot more. And it's absolutely glorious to see. I would say in the past 6-7 years or so, the network, the family of family friendly or all ages friendly content developers of creators has just grown exponentially. And it's just going to continue to grow because you see so many people wanting to share their love of storytelling, share their love of gaming and nerdiness with the next generation. Whether that is a family member, like a young sibling or a cousin, whether you've got friends with kids, whether you're doing volunteer work, whether you have kids of your own, or whether you have all of that, but also you're just brand new to TTRPGs. And that's the thing about all ages. It's not just, oh, you're writing a game for children. You're writing a game that anyone, regardless of their age or experience level, can pick up and play. And if you're able to incorporate that into your design in a mindful way, a lot of our clients, a lot of our collaborators try to emphasize certain aspects of interpersonal skills development, problem solving, critical thinking, team building, all of that into their design. And that's, we work a lot with like educators in the field as well, educators and psychologists, gaming for therapy and counseling. There are so many different applications of this. But we wanted to have that emphasis on all ages, accessibility, easy to pick up and just go on an adventure, I suppose. And of course, supporting indie. So we are not working with like the big names. We're working with people just like any of us here listening to this episode, who you just have an idea for a game, you want to make it happen, you have some direction with it. And we want to help.
We're coming up on our end here, but I want to just say congratulations on getting to this point and for the Kickstarter fulfillments to start coming out.
Finally! yes.
Yeah, long time coming, but super exciting for all the people who were in there on the ground floor helping you guys make it happen.
Shout out to everyone who supported us and who has been wonderfully, beautifully patient as we go through the different challenges of fulfillment and logistics and all of it. Thank you, everyone. And thank you so much for the opportunity to come here and nerd out and info dump a little bit.
Of course. One last thing before we say goodbye here. Yeah. Do you have like a story from a game you've played in that has stuck with you throughout the years that, you know, sad, happy, fun, anything that you'd like to share?
Before I realized Bard RPG was even going to be a thing, I'll share a story of one of the young kids who joined the game. So started out with intro to D&D sessions in the bookstore. She and her mom came up and you could tell that she really was interested in playing D&D, but was hesitant. They saw me a female presenting GM and said, can she play this? We thought it was just for boys. Or we thought she wasn't sure if she would be welcome to play, but you're running this game. Is this something that you think she can play? I said, absolutely. So she joined in. She eventually became one of the regulars, and she and her mom started joining. Other siblings got involved as well. Started off very shy, but as we were going through the homebrew system and going through the character and these different scenarios, started to find her voice. And it was one of the most beautiful things. And it's something that really stuck with me from, you know, working with kids, but then designing as well, seeing how you have someone who is gaining so much confidence, even from a young age, someone who is coming in, like already feeling like she wasn't welcome in a certain community, but then being able to fully embrace it to the point where she was leading a rescue quest or speaking out and being like the first one to jump in for something. And I think it showed me the power that games can have and the power that creating a good story and a good environment can have in helping people grow. So it's not specifically a moment, but a progression of a character. I got a little emotional there.
Yeah, no, it's...
Maybe it's because I'm a parent now, too.
I just think it's emotional when people... You watch somebody grow and change and become more confident. I understand.
She's running her own games now. She's a GM.
There we go. Yeah, of course.
It's amazing. Full circle.
Well, Scriv, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with me about this game. We're super excited that we get to play it.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone.
And you all can watch or listen to our mini show using Bard RPG called Shades of the West, premiering on August 6th. And we hope you guys enjoy the show.